everybody. Welcome back to The Gods Will Not Save You, The Wire Revisited. I'm Willie.
Hi, my name's Yaka. This is a podcast where the co-hosts do a deep read into each episode of The Wire. And we're here to talk about unconfirmed reports. Oh, wait. I made a typo in the little outline.
It's a fun typo, though. This is our discussion of Season 5, Episode 2, Unconfirmed Reports, anchor.fm/thegodswillnotsaveyou/support. We tragically lost one of our financial supporters, but that's okay. We're keeping our heads high. If anybody wants to help us get over the mourning period that we're currently experiencing. No, it's all in good fun. Everybody experiences financial burdens. They probably have more important things to attend to.
Fake drought.
But anyway, let's get into it. And this opening scene here at a NA meeting has a very appreciated cameo by Richard Price's, pretty good actress daughter, Genevieve Hudson Price, playing Dee Dee, completing her little 3-season arc of someone buying an 8-ball, someone turning to prostitution, and, staying on the drugs, and then someone who gets clean from the drugs.
Yeah, and leaving us to kind of only infer or imagine all the horrors of her journey, which she alludes to, but
right.
Very brutal stuff.
Yeah.
And, like you say, great acting.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just like, wow, amazing evolution and cycle here, which I really didn't notice. Or like I've said before, I'm such a average viewer at times. I never was able to be like, okay, I reached that level. I got the I followed along this time. Thank you.
I don't think anybody, like with this show, it's so dense at times. I don't think anybody really can unearth like all the Easter eggs or whatnot, no matter how much of a eagle eye you have. Well, I don't know. There's some people out there in the Twitter sphere who give us a run for our money.
Definitely.
Ziggy's Duck, we're looking at you. Also,
shout out,
yeah.
Kurt Burke.
And then Jonathan, a.k.a. Analog Syndicate.
Analog Syndicate.
Pretty good.
Awesome.
Love his
awesome
takes.
Dude.
Of course, the Rewired people, the Wire Stripped.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think like I'm able to put myself in the same sentence as some of those people. They're so legit. But,
okay, I mean, yeah. Come on, man. You're going to blow us all away this episode.
And that's unconfirmed as of this time.
Oh, okay. What is confirmed is that it's November and we're still, I never thought heat would be like an issue at this point. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, let's power through though. So,
Bubs gets called up and he can't. He can't get the truth. Like he can't, get to the root cause of a lot of his pain and like anguish at this moment. Like Dee Dee was able to kind of relies on his trademark quick wit and humor and doing a stand up routine about how he was like a stand-up leaning dope
fiend. Yeah, they turned him into a scarecrow and
yeah, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, he's kind of
good times. I mean, no.
He's kind of in robotic mode, just trying to find his way, trying to find things and activities that he could do throughout the day that'll eat into his time so he stays away from temptation. Waylon is giving him some tough love, some harsh but needed lectures on like what he needs to do in order to like fully reach that level of catharsis or whatever. It seems like we've discussed that like Ed Burns mostly took like a step back from this season. But there's a lot of like Ed Burns-esque, like according to, you know, what we read in All the Pieces Matter, like scenes of Bubs just trying to find his way. Like he's going into the Viva house, like volunteering to scrub pots. He's like eating, you know, dinner and looking at a mother like being abusive to her kid. Like it's a lot of like methodically paced, you know, anti-drama that we're watching or whatnot. But I you know, it's really great at driving home the point that it's a constant struggle and you gotta go to war with the boredom and the emptiness that, you know, one could potentially feel when they're recovering from a lifelong addiction that was capped off by a horrible tragedy. So great stuff here.
And guitar guy.
Steve Earle Wayland.
He's a like he's battled addiction
himself. Yeah
and like, because like, man, is that acting? I mean, you know, acting.
Yeah, I
mean, he's like super awkward, just makes you feel like, oh god, like he's just, hey man.
Yeah, he's got the authenticity. He brings the authenticity to his delivery for sure, you know. Lot of great performances in this show by, you know, non-professional actors that brings up the whole argument of what can like directors get out of, you know, like Harry Dean Stanton said at one point, like anybody could be a great actor as long as they have a great director. So with Ernest Dickerson taking the reins on this episode, he really pulled it out of Steve Earle, you know, little asterisk by his name. Of course, he experienced some real horrible, you know, tragedy in his own life when his son, unfortunately died of a drug overdose. So that just like puts a whole new layer of context on this character. This show is always evolving throughout its history. And, you know, he sings the theme for this season's theme song.
Oh, okay, that's him.
Yeah.
Ah, all right. Well, tell us more about Viva House.
Oh, yeah. So you pointed out it's located on 26th South Mount Street.
Is it? I mean, I don't know. I just, you know, leave little notes for, like, further geo investigations, but I'm kind of, like, I already, overkill with that stuff. Sorry, everyone.
No,
what else?
So the people that we see running this little operation apparently are the real co-owners. It's a husband and wife team of Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham. Let's see, I have a little history write-up from the Catholic Worker Movement, catholicworker.org.
Okay.
Viva House opened in 1968, and for the past half a century, their community has provided hospitality, soup kitchen, food pantry for their neighbors, and they do their best to resist the injustices of capitalism, militarism, racism, and sexism. If you're interested in more stuff about it, Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh published a book called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way, and they attempted to explain their work through essays and art. That's from catholicworker.org. Pretty, you know, it's...
it's crazy. Yeah. Too woke, let's get them.
but in the commentary... Clark Johnson, you know, if you ever get the, like, I know I've said this before, like, if I don't watch an episode with the commentary, my head will explode or whatever. Clark Johnson, the guy who plays Gus Haynes, is really quite a hilarious guy and provides, like, a lot of great insight into pretty much everything, behind the scenes. And he talked about how he felt like it was a great thing they were doing to include real people from the community just to give it that kind of like, you know, undescribable feeling of magic where, you know, life is reflecting art or whatever the saying is. Anyway,
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, take the reins.
All right, thank you for all that great stuff. You're crushing it, man. What do you want to talk about next? The Policia, something else?
We can move on. I feel like we covered Bubs pretty much. He's
very thorough.
Scrubbing away at the pots and not feeling satisfied.
Okay, yeah. Lester's giving a little lesson here.
Yeah.
Sidner's like, okay, this is what we're up to now. And old Lester's after all that dark money.
Yeah.
It's a Koch brother conspiracy in Baltimore.
I mean, kind of.
No, it's just Clay's money laundering.
Yeah.
He's doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Know? All kinds of shady dealings with politicians having their hands in too many different shady people's pockets and amassing a wealth and not putting the money where his mouth is and not donating to all these charities that he says he's going to. In a way, I feel like Lester... some of him like took the whole like disbanding of the major crimes unit in stride because he's a really smart guy and he sees in a lot of ways that the Clay Davis issue is intertwined with Marlowe's criminal empire in a lot of ways. So he's kind of working overtime as we see to still look into Chris and Snoop and Marlowe's shady dealings. But he's smart enough to know that, like, you know, you got to find out where money is coming from. There's probably some connection somewhere.
Right on, yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, definitely a place the money's not going to or coming from is the police department itself. Because there's none of that in the profession.
Yeah.
The money.
Yeah, they're going to have to sell jewelry or contracting or what it like Bunks says he's
cigar shop.
But then like at one point McNulty says like, what are you qualified to do? And he like makes like a reference to his suit. But like I was also
I thought it was more like, you know,
my Johnson,
like his gig, like he's gonna be like a gigolo or something.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's I was a little thank you for
stereotyping.
No, not even. I mean,
that's why we're here, that's why I'm here for you. But
no. I mean, I get that you're here for me to you know, back me up and saying like, oh yeah, Bunk might have been pointing to his dick in response to that question that McNulty asked, because I was like, am I crazy or is he like making it a sex thing? Like, I know he's fashionable and has talked about his clothes in the past. Like, is he going to become a suit salesman?
Maybe, yeah. Or, yeah, he's just sexy Bunk.
Yeah. But yeah. McNulty is having to take the bus to crime scenes. There's flat tires in the cars that he's supposed to be using. Yeah, just a real.
How do you feel? Do you feel bad for him?
In a way, but like.
No, I know. I set us up for. Violence. No.
Rhetorical violence.
Yeah, he hurts his foot. That was funny. He kicks his broken car.
Yeah. But, we talked a little bit about the whole Bobby Brown conundrum simulation beforehand.
Yeah,
where it's like,
man.
He was not the cop that they were referring to in the corner. He just has the same name, like, whatever. It's, like, confusing. But then I was watching this with the commentary, and Clark Johnson and Bill Zorzi both acknowledged that he was a cop before he got into acting. So I think there's a possibility that there were just two cops named Bobby Brown, but I don't know. It's all like kind of confusing, but regardless of all that,
you were searching really deeply there. He has his eyes closed. He's like, what? Speak to me, Bill Clark.
Regardless of all that, this guy, Bobby Brown, is like a pretty fascinating guy. Like he, directed a documentary about the unfairly maligned reputation of pit bulls over time called Off the Chain. Directed another documentary about Parliament Funkadelic. And at one point he acted in a short film called Bummin' Baltimore.
Since he's into music, like it's confirmed it's about the animal species, not the like artist Unchained.
Off the Chain is the name is the name of the Pitbull documentary.
Pitbull, four nights, five shows, Off the Chain.
And then Tear the Roof Off is the untold story of Parliament Funkadelic.
That seems crazy. We should have a watch party after we're done.
Something.
After we get this over with, as you like to. No, I'm just kidding. I'm being the mopey one. I'm bumming it in Baltimore.
No.
Virtually meta.
But this is a really interesting guy who tells McNulty that he just throws up before he goes to work as they're looking at a dead body, mother of four.
Always the mother of four, man.
Yeah, right.
Running theme we'll get to. Yeah. Or. I don't know. Happy Veterans Day.
Yeah, happy Veterans Day, man.
But we stand with Viva House, anti-militarism.
I was not expecting to that there was like an undercurrent of that much wokeness beneath, Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham's charitable work. I mean, they're against child abuse, at least. That's a good thing.
I mean, if you need to spank your kid, like, is that their, place? No, I'm just kidding. It's pretty, yeah. I don't believe in, corporal punishment.
Yeah, neither do I.
But I don't have kids, so what do I know? Nothing, apparently. Unless you have kids and a meal delivery kit, you ain't shit in this world, apparently.
Okay.
As a millennial.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah, man. Thanks for sharing about Bobby Brown, one of the most fascinating people we may know or don't know enough about.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I could stop this minor obsession after this episode recording and stop looking into him, because it's really messing up my train of thought and, perhaps my research instincts could be used for greater good. I don't know.
No, don't stop. Very entertaining.
Yeah.
I want to get in on this now. Who is the Bobby Brown of The Wire? Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Were you going to say something?
No. Go ahead.
So as we stated, Bubs watches some pretty horrendous child abuse in the Viva home. And it's kind of like a recurring thing in this episode with Lester witnessing some pretty horrible treatment of a parent to her child when he's doing his own extracurricular stakeout activities, realizing that Marlo is going to get sloppy now that they know that they're not being watched by the cops anymore. Do you have any theories as to why these scenes were included, or what was the thing about it? I mean, they're both just kind of throwaway little references, but does this speak to something greater that Bill Zorzi and David Simon were trying to communicate?
I don't know. Am I at a David Simon talk where he's like, hey, audience, come on. Average, average, average. Oh, you're on to something. Come on. No. I mean, it's great. It's more in the realm of just walk around the block a few times, scrub a few pots, don't really do much. Ed Burns type stuff, so that's cool. Also, it's always fun to catch the police in a geo fraud fake trout lie on the McCullough Street lot when you're clearly on the east side by Connie Terrain's hideaway, which I'm yet to nail down an exact location. I've been too busy, unfortunately, doing fake trout activities that I can't really get on the Google Maps as much as I used to. But it's definitely like probably on the east side, maybe Ellsworth or something near Junebug's house. But I don't know. Is this like, if it's about Marlo and them, I don't know. Why do they keep using the same lie? It's like, we're just going to keep doing what we do. Like, we're not going to change up because of the cops or whatever. Who cares? Anyways, I don't know. Like, they fit the kid scene in there, and there's obviously like another underlying theme with the whole Dickensian aspect and journalism and stuff. So, but I don't know. Like, do you think they're that crazy where they had Lester do that just to throw in another scene with, like, a kid in a different facet where they're like, okay, we showed the, like, junky white mom at Viva House. Now we got to show, like, the hood black mom, like, neglecting her kid, you know?
Could be. I don't know.
It's like, you got to show both sides so we're not just, like, focusing on, like, the whole, oh, you know, it starts in the household. Like, that's the root of all the problems. Like, you know, Clark Johnson, okay, Gus, going all Denzel Washington on us. Like,
can you explain that, Denzel Washington?
No, because he's like, you know, it's like Larry Elder will do a video like, Denzel's the only black person in Hollywood, like, telling the truth about race. Like, it starts at home, you know, like, that's the problem. Like, it's not like, it's the culture, man. That's, you know, that's the root of all these problems facing black people. It's nothing to do with like racism. Like, you need strong parenting, but then it's like, where does culture like start? You know, like, it obviously begins somewhere where like things got really messed up, and that's what they're trying to hash out in the newsroom. I didn't see Gus taking that angle. I mean, obviously parenting is really important, but if you can't pay your bills or you don't have any resources, how are you going to start at home? There's no home.
Yeah. I mean, institutionalized racism for sure, 100% is a factor. And
yeah, like there's all, you know, it's like, why are you growing up in a terrible neighborhood with like poor housing infrastructure? Because, you know, there's obviously a lot of underlying things. I don't want to throw out woke liberal keyword buzzword. Ugh.
Yeah.
It starts at home.
But then we do see Bubs witnessing Dee Dee with her child, you know, being really sweet and, you know, loving.
Larry approves. Oh, wait, wrong race.
But that's like a...
Oh, biracial kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Jesus.
Screw you, Larry.
We also see Bubs witnessing, you know, some sweet moment of mother-child playfulness, but he seems kind of like numb to it. Is this supposed to be something like he still hasn't got a hold of like his like emotions, that he can't allow himself to like be happy at looking at something like this, or he's not reached that level of a happiness that Dee Dee has achieved? I don't know.
Yeah, he hasn't let the truth, like, he's still going through the motions. So, yeah he's not like, you know, he's not super, like, yeah, he's just, he has a ways to go.
Yeah.
It's like his sister's mean to him, you know?
Hella mean to
him.
She
won't even let him, like, go hang out and make waffles or use her kitchen.
Yeah. yeah, he's been sober for 15 months.
That's
now.
A long ass time.
I know.
Longer than I've been, so... Oh, wait.
But great actor, Andre Royo. But let's talk a little bit about, like, Jimmy's first brush with coming up with the idea of to, you know, fake the whole serial killer angle. He's in what is apparently, like, the real Baltimore morgue and witnessing a little...
That's the real one, but there's no, what's his name? Eric Dellums.
I don't know. That's what Clark Johnson said.
I'm sorry, Clark.
But he said that also, like, they used it a lot when filming Homicide. We got to watch Homicide, dude. I feel like we should just start over this whole project after we finish Homicide, because I feel like we're missing out on a lot of... No.
I mean, I'm down to watch it.
Yeah,
I
I'm just, not going to torture.
I don't know about like redoing. I mean, no. Remastered seasons one through three. No.
Self-inflicted torture. This is.
Go for it. I'll listen to you. I might donate and then not donate and then donate. Yeah, tell us more about, you know, like some of the people he's coming in contact with. And
so it's this whole thing where he overhears a cop like arguing with a what are those
like a coroner,
yeah,
or
coroner,
like a, in like a new, like kind of like how they would, oh, that's a rookie cop, like she's new and is giving them a hard time,
rookie coroner, like the cop is arguing with her like this is a overdose, but then she's like, no, there's foul play involved because there's bruises on his neck, like it's homicide and, you know, the drug use is secondary, blah, blah, blah. And then McNulty is talking to Nancy Porter, who, like, you know, does the whole explanation that like when a body is freshly dead, there could be like bruises that come onto the neck from like, you know, some incidental activity, like when his neck gets wedged in between the toilet bowl and the bathtub and the cops are yanking on his neck, which, you know, led the coroner to make that a false ruling. But apparently Kevin Infante and Nancy Porter, Kevin Infante, I guess, was the other cop that was there. Their characters from the Laura Lippman novel Every Secret Thing, who is David Simon's wife. So that was a nice thing that David Simon did for his wife there, doing a little crossover.
Seems like a good thing he did there.
Yeah, that was a nice thing. But
that's crazy, though. Thanks for sharing about Laura Lippman. Gotta read all her novels. Gotta redo this project.
Yeah, we didn't have the proper context before going into this.
I started one once and I was like, okay, and then I probably put it down or like stopped to read more, like other stuff. Such a fake trout for that, because now like missed out on so much.
There's so much content out there. Sorry. But, what the but oh my God.
That was like all time.
What's
up with Fitzhugh? Whatever you want to talk about.
But yeah, so Lester Freeman runs into Jimmy as they're leaving the breakfast, and he kind of convinces him that they should Lester breaks the news to him that like Marla's getting sloppy and they could like move in for the kill. So like, hey, let's take this federal. Let's bring our work to the FBI and we could maybe get some stuff going here. So of course they meet up with Fitzhugh in their, man, really bad shaped vehicle there, as opposed to Fitzhugh's pristine.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a smog check.
Seriously, pretty illustrative of the income inequality of the different branches of law enforcement. Anyway, they try to get this thing going with the FBI. They're pretty supportive, but lo and behold, they bring this to the same U.S. attorney who has a bone to pick with Tommy Carchetti. And, you know, it's a great other thing of, you know, shit rolling downhill, cause and effect, like the chain of command is just messing things up for them because of Carchetti's stubbornness. They're gonna let more people die because Marlo's allowed to run rampant with the violence,
all because they can't give up Clay, right? And who's also involved, like you said, off top.
Yeah,
like it's all part of the same problem.
Yeah, human politics. Life matters less and less
every day.
Yeah.
All lives matter less and less every day.
Yep.
I mean, but hey, that brings us to them kind of lamenting the situation at the bar.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, it's bunk. He's like a homicide detective.
Right.
He's always giving like Omar shit about how the neighborhood used to be like more of a unit. And now look at us and look what you're teaching the kids.
Yeah.
But he's still on like BLM stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Is this like the wokest police? Like, yeah.
No, I saw some stuff on, what is that thing? A Jubilee.
Oh.
It was like debate forum things. Oh. Like, I don't know, stream. And it's like, you'll see some, I don't know. It's just like, you like Twitch, YouTube people.
Oh.
I'm blurring like reality and stuff. But you'll see some cops on there like, yeah, we need to be like disarmed or defunded. Hell yeah.
Oh, really?
But they're like actual, like I thought it was a joke, but apparently they were real. But sorry, like, yeah, it's bunk, man. He's like,
yeah,
suit and tie, dad, like he's the like police.
There's more Ed Burns's out there than give him credit for. Do you think, because at one point, like in this conversation where they're talking about like, you know, if 22 white people were killed, they would like make a much bigger deal out of it. You know,
yeah,
this whole like homicide thing is out of control. We can't get people to investigate the murders of black people. But then at one point, Bunk says like, Jimmy, you're the smartest guy here. What do you think we should do? Like, come on, Bunk. Don't tell him that, because it's just giving him carte blanche to... number one, be unfaithful to his wife. I mean, I don't know if there's a direct cause and effect with that, but it definitely is like McNulty feels like he has to take this situation into his own hand and make this.
yeah, it's like that's dangerous, but I mean, maybe a bit sarcastic.
Yeah,
but first of all, I just want to like. Rewind a little. I mean, it's about class too, with like the stuff about like, you know, race and Natalie Holloway and like white people. Like, come on, it's not just about race, you know.
I mean, in this instance, they're specifically talking about.
I mean, race. Like, look at Johnny. He's a white guy found in like a vacant house, and he just got wheeled out the back like nothing ever happened, right?
Yeah, that's true, but that's. Like,
no, I know, I'm just like,
yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, but that was like a special circumstance with Hamsterdam where they were just trying to sanitize it as much as possible. Like,
yeah, and that was an OD, like we're talking misdemeanor homicide.
Yeah, that's so. A pretty it's like a sad and disturbing term that Bunk is using there,
right?
Yeah.
Anyways, sorry, what, you were on, another topic that I was like, decided to troll you about or something.
No. I mean, yeah, we like, the next day McNulty's hungover and gets the
McNulty's hungover
from going to a party and shotgunning a blunt with Sim Charles and having an orgy. No.
McNulty's hungover because he was at the bar being told that he's the smartest guy in the room and ruining his marriage with Beatty because he's taking 14 shots at Jameson and being a slumlord fake trout. And partying with Slim Charles. Come on.
That'd be cool. I'd love to see that crossover.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, McNulty does at one point reiterate a lesson he got from Bodie, like the game is fucking rigged, you know, learning a lot of things from the other side of the law. But this is, you know, where a lot of people consider the show jumping the shark, so to speak, when McNulty frames the overdose death that Bunk and him find as a job of a serial killer, setting him off on this kind of dangerous path. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's things written about, like, how it's unfair that this season was so truncated that they probably could have fleshed this whole plot out a little bit more and made it some more plausible. It's still, like, the jury's still out for me. As we like rewatch more episodes, but I think it's still, this is still a pretty great episode.
I like, I mean, yeah. And it's also kind of, you know, look at, you know, now I think most of the homeless people he's gonna set up in this way are white guys, right? So it's like kind of,
he's like casting a nasty reflection on the city's biases.
I mean, there's still homeless white dudes, but they matter more than like what's happening, you know,
with the bodies and the vacants.
Yeah. And like other murders where they just, oh, three more black people killed in a house, like drug related, back page. Yeah. Can't even get a quote.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I'm such like a, I'm not a huge critic, so I mean, about specific things like geofraud and other dumb stuff, but yeah, I don't know. Jimmy's pretty crazy, and it's like opens up his little war chest of Jameson before he does something evil, and then like if it's not such a great episode, then why does one of the other like, well, not other, but another show that's like, oh wow, season one of True Detective, like greatest, like one of the best shows, you know. Yeah. And then every time Matthew McConaughey's doing something shady, he's like chugging Jameson and stuff.
Right, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen that show. Maybe due for a rewatch soon.
Let's do, yeah, man. There's a lot of content out there.
But it's funny because like there's been like a whole lot of discussion like, oh, what could have, like if they decided to do another season of The Wire, what would the next theme be? Like immigration, healthcare. I feel like homelessness would be or like the unhoused would be a pretty brilliant addition to the thematic discussion of you know, capitalism in a major metropolitan area.
Yeah, don't even get me started, man.
Oh yeah, you're, man, you're a you have a
CatholicWorker.org.
You got a vendetta against the slumlords for sure. Maybe you're the person to write the next great American television show.
Yeah, if I don't open a bottle of Chopin and just start crying while watching Tom Brady continue to win Super Bowls.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Sounds like you got some inner demons there.
Flesh it out.
Yeah.
So kind of juxtapose with like these comments about misdemeanor homicide and all that stuff a little bit before, you know, McNulty's committing like a misdemeanor. No, I don't know. It's all crazy, but you know,
misdemeanor fake trout.
Yeah. Marlo's up to stuff and he's like ready to get back on the warpath now that he thinks he's not being followed or watched, you know, pretty much what Jimmy predicted.
Yeah.
This is going to happen, happens. Cause like without the police, like we ain't shit. I mean, you know, it's a joke.
It's a joke.
It's like if Marlo wants to kill someone though, like, okay.
Yeah. He probably
is going to do it.
He probably, dropped some bodies in that 15-month period in between the end of season four and the beginning of season five that don't know about.
Yeah. Just like if safety, public safety is having police like babysit criminals, you know, so that they don't perhaps commit a murder, you know, if that's the plan, then we're definitely really, we're screwed, you know? So it's like, it's not very realistic in my opinion. Obviously, like something else has got to change, but.
Yeah. I don't know what the solution is. But.
You tell me. None.
But Marlo's on this whole, tirade. He's, he wants to kill someone that he, refers to as a dick sucker. But then he also wants to kill somebody who may or may not have called him a dick sucker. But he just,
wait, was it a dick, like, or was it a suck dick?
Jesus.
And then Webster Franklin just gets like wrapped up in there. Like, who the hell is this person? Like, something about his corner. Wait, is that the guy in the last episode or no?
No. I don't know.
come on, putting you on the spot. No. Someone named Webster Franklin did something about his corner, pissed him off.
Yeah. So he sends Marlo sends Chris, Snoop, and O-Dog to take care of the situation. O-Dog wants to try alternative met, like he's getting all fancy with it and wants to do West Coast like, drive-bys, but
he's doing like the ivermectin of drive, like of killing. It's like I did my own research, guys. Like, we could do it the way these guys do it. I called a good friend on the West Coast.
Yeah,
he knows a lot about medicine. I mean, killing.
Homeopathic homicide.
Yeah, there you go. Holistic homicide.
Oh man, that's dark.
It's all pretty brutal.
Yeah, let's talk about how Chris and Snoop are bringing Michael along to this whole Junebug killing, and Michael's like kind of perplexed at the whole notion, like, why are we killing someone that's rumored to have like said Marlo was gay, but he's still kind of like naive about the whole thing, like, oh, we can't let, you know, somebody's reputation quote unquote get ruined by stupid rumor like this. And I don't know if you caught it, but before Snoop and Chris do the little home invasion, they cut the wires to one of those street police cameras, which is adorned with the Believe O'Malley campaign slogan. Is this just coincidental? Is that like a real camera that they're showing? Or is this a subtle, not so subtle diss at O'Malley's reputation?
This is Ed Burns just going around cutting like the cop watch or whatever, city watch, like wires, because he's just like, this is government overreach. Like, I'm kind of a sovereign citizen now. I live in West Virginia. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, who knows? Like,
yeah. I mean, Bill Zorzi himself is like, oh, yeah, these cameras are ineffective. They're not really a big deterrent.
Shot spotter.
Yeah.
And I want to learn more about that. I've heard like shady stuff about them, or, you know, never know. It's like,
yeah,
more like what really keeps us safe, you know? Is this authentic that Snoop has to cut anything? You know, wouldn't it make sense that like in a city as broke and like dysfunctional as Baltimore, like the thing doesn't even work in the first place?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know Marlo and all of them are feeling emboldened by these recent developments, but I still think that they're sharp enough to, you know, cover their bases and whatnot. So.
And it's like, we're getting Marlo tendencies on both sides. Like, Chris is like displaying his like work ethic and patience when it comes to doing a job. Like, it's kind of lame. I mean, Omar would be there like a day before. He just is there an hour or two. So it's like fake drought, Chris. Okay, come on now. And then Michael, on the other hand, is like, hey, man, you know, code, man. Like,
can't even kill a kid.
Yeah, like, what is that with that? It's almost like young Omar giving back a wallet to, like, some guy they rob, you know? It's like, what is up with this? Like, a kid's got to have a code now, too?
Oh.
No. But, you know, we talk about, and it's pretty apparent, he's the next Omar, so makes sense. This is like, is this going to be his like this is the Mike prequel, but in reality he would like, this would be the scene where he like shoots them or like turns the gun on them, like, no, we're not like doing this.
That's right.
But he's kind of fake job. But he, I mean, what are you going to do? You know how you said we need the Slim Charles McNulty party, like hangover, like with Dennis, Cuddy Wise, and all that.
Yeah.
We need the Barlow, Landsman, broke cop, pressure treated Snoop with all her knowledge of like hardware stores and like drills and stuff to have like the home improvement, like contracting crossover where they work like restorative justice, like mass murder and homicide detectives. Like, can they build this house without like someone getting chopped up and put into the insulation?
Wow.
No, I don't know.
Brilliant.
That's stupid.
That's great.
But like home improvement, both like power tool, like, yeah, both sides of the law. Like, what? I mean,
nice
gray area, towing the line.
Yeah. So let's get into a little bit about what Marlo's up to when he's making his underlings get their hands dirty. He's, still making his play for the throne or the crown or whatever. So he goes down to Jessup to try and talk to Sergei so he could get in bed with the Greeks. And he hits a wall when Avon comes out and talks to him in the visiting room. And man, like, I don't want to say I feel sorry for Avon,
yeah,
but this is definitely like, he's definitely been taken down a peg or two. Like,
I'm glad you elaborated because it's all caps pathetic in the outline, a pathetic appearance by Avon. I'm like, whoa, what happened? Oh, I get it. Cause he's just so like, it's kind of cringy.
Yeah. Like he has to say like, oh, I'm an authority figure around here. Whereas before you like, it's kind of unspoken, like everybody just like feared him, but now he's like a man without a country almost, where he's like collaborating with the Greeks and he feels the need to flash, like he's flashing gang signs at Marlo and like trying to like be buddy buddy with him, like, what's up with you, man? Like, you know, just send some money to my sister, like, how are you doing? Like, what's going on? Like, are we cool now? Like, it's just like he was so vicious beforehand and now it's like he's been totally emasculated by this whole, secondary prison episode for him. No more 2-day philosophy for him, for sure. This is his whole existence.
Yeah, I guess. I see it, man. That's a good point. Yeah. But, I mean, he's also like being a troll too, right? Like, West Side, gotta stick together, right? You my homie. All right, give my sister $100,000.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
I mean, there's,
I'm pimping you out, but like family, right?
Yeah, and it's multi-layered for sure.
Yeah, and then Sergei's like, I don't care. Like,
yeah,
canteen.
This like, is not prison.
Yeah,
in my country, I do 4 years.
He did 4 years.
Didn't he say that?
Oh, like, I don't know. I heard he just said like this is like whatever.
Yeah.
Ukraine, yeah. Not Russia.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Virginia. He's not Ukrainian.
They said that he actually studied Russian for this role and like ad-libbed that little line in there and yeah. Nobody can
Nobody knows what it means.
Yeah, I mean, obviously somebody out there knows what it means, but
I know just the two that could get it for us, but they haven't watched the show.
Yeah, our collaborators who helped out a lot with this major success story that is our podcast.
So successful.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit. Let's move on to Shitty Hall.
Oh, yeah. Carcetti is not excited about test scores. Wait, so they're up 15 points, which we all know is like, you know, another example of messing, juking the stats.
Right, right.
But he did take the money then? Or am I super slow and behind and average?
I don't.
Because they're like, that's all 54 million could get you. Or did they say like, oh, that's all, like, good thing you didn't take the money because that's all you're going to get. 15 points, that's BS.
But I think if he had taken the money, then there wouldn't be the issue of the police department being so broke. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe there already was like 54 million in the city budget and he just like shifted it over to the schools and decided to underfund the police. I'm not too clear on like why he said the things he did, but he's doing a shitty job of governing at this point, which is ironic because he's gonna make a run for the governor's seat halfway into his mayoral term, kind of making Odell Watkins perhaps feel disillusioned with his decision to endorse him in the primary. Some real depressing stuff that he also pissed off the U.S. attorney and prevented the Marlo Stanfield case from reaching the desired conclusion. But
selfish guy.
But I want you to elaborate on what you said here in the outline about some of the names that were thrown out in the meeting.
I don't really know that much. I mean, he goes to talk to the PG County, Prince George's, Pretty Girl County, whatever. Steny Miller Maloney.
Yeah.
And I know these are real dudes, or I'm assuming they're all guys I know Steny, I think.
Steny Hoyer?
Yeah. And you talked about him because I brought him up in the whole like Kurt Schmoke controversy about, you know, most dangerous man in America because he wanted to talk about like drug legalization. And he was someone, Steny actually sat like on the side of the people who are going to, you know, like Pete Stark and Marion Barry, maybe like we said, didn't age well, but you were like, oh, he's and then, you know, used your vast political knowledge to like name his, title or like position.
Well, he's not the Speaker of the House because that's Nancy Pelosi, but he's the House Majority Leader.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Yeah. So yeah, that's that guy. And then I don't know if these are the guy, like there's, you know, Miller and Maloney. That's kind of like, I don't know. There was a guy named Thomas Mike Miller who was a, Calvert. I don't know if that's him, but he was like a whatever politician down there. So
okay,
big stuff, you know. And he retired, and everyone's like, "Oh, you know, he was the greatest guy." Like Governor Hogan was talking this and that. I don't know how much to look into it because nothing really like funny stands out or like crazy. Like, come on, we're talking about like Bobby Brown conspiracies and like all sorts of crazy stuff. We got more to talk about, like about the newsroom. That's going to be just mind blowing stuff. So this is just, it's kind of like, little like vanilla, you know, he just retired. But the other guy, this is kind of crazy. If this is him, Prince George's Councilman Maloney dies. This is from 2001. He was the Maverick Prince George's County Council member who often was the body's lone voice of dissent, died Sunday afternoon in a car accident, his family said. So he was a like old school Democrat who kind of made things difficult on like development down in Prince George's and like kind of was like the checks and balances dude, like old school guy. And I guess he had a heart attack while driving with his wife to their daughter's Anne Arundel County home for a family Halloween party, and like,
oh man,
his car veered off the road and hit a tree, and like really tragic stuff. So
it's horrible.
If that's him, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're paying homage to him because like he had a very illustrious career in the like context of Maryland politics. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's not me. Like, I don't know anything about the guy. So,
but.
Anyways,
that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, you know, it's like big time dudes. Oh, yeah. Damn.
You all right there?
No, I'm good. Yeah, so it's like you pretty much like gave us all the like lowdown on Carchetti and Watkins and Steinorf, evil budget guy.
Steintorf. Yeah.
Shining, what are they? Every day they shine shit and call it gold?
Yet.
Or
the world shines shit and calls it gold.
There you go.
I guess.
Every day.
Yeah. So I guess we can finish things off with the newsroom proceedings. Not the Aaron Sorkin show.
Oh, yeah. What? No. We got to get into your, like, have a little bonus Patreon on your relationship with Sorkin.
No, that's okay. Let's talk a little bit about this anecdote that that Gus is sharing with his fellow reporters about a Frank Somerville.
Did he say Frank Somerville in there? Because I felt all like, oh, Somerville. And then I was like, oh, Frank Somerville?
Amazing. Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember if he said it exactly, but just listening to the commentary, Bill Zorzi did drop the name Frank Somerville quite a few times. So
yeah,
I can't decide where I heard it first, but.
Got it. I'm glad, because you found that out and I found my own way to Frank Somerville. So, okay. But what's up? He was the religion editor at the Baltimore Sun. And this is well after probably this anecdote. It's from the real, it's like a real, story when he was a young reporter talking to, because they're always
Tommy D'Alessandro
Jr., I'm assuming, because that or maybe not. I don't know. Because, his dad was the mayor, but that was, that was a long time ago. There was a big gap. So if it wasn't Tommy D'Alessandro III, Nancy Pelosi's brother, who was the mayor in, late 60s until, early 70s, then it was his dad. But that was, in the 50s.
I think so. Because didn't they say Frank Somerville was, a reporter back then?
That's what I'm saying. He was such an OG, old school reporter that it was Big Tommy, or what do they call him? And I get so confused, Big Tommy, Young Tommy, Tony. But anyways.
Simulation working in overtime. Yeah.
So do you think that experience was so traumatizing, he had to turn to God and religion and then became the religion editor as a result?
That's great theory. Just for the listeners who might not remember, can you paraphrase what
It's my desk wants to know, talking in the context of a news reporter, whatever city desk or political desk, the editor. The newsroom jargon.
Right.
But then, he's being facetious or sarcastic.
Yeah.
Talking about a literal desk. And my desk tells your desk to go fuck yourself or whatever. Right. So funny stuff, man. Yeah. What a mayor. Yeah.
It is funny, but there's discussion amongst them, oh, is this real? It's too good to check out, which maybe foreshadows the whole ethical dilemma of Scott Templeton making up the whole EJ thing for his Baltimore Orioles story. It's too good to check out for the editor in chief, but Gus is going back on his own instincts of saying, the Tommy D'Alessandro story was too good to check out, but he's we're holding ourselves to a higher standard. You don't even have any art on the kid. So is that some brilliant foreshadowing there in the writing? I don't know.
Yeah, they've been doing it. And I wanted to post, last episode, I missed, I wanted to talk about with you how Dozierman's that crazy story with you, Jimmy. I read it in the report, and he's like, don't believe everything you read, right?
That's good.
And I was like, oh, damn.
There was another thing from the last episode that I wanted to touch on just real quick, the whole thing with Bunk saying the bigger the lie, the more they believe, is pretty funny. They brought up that quote on the latest Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. Who was the person who said that thing, the bigger the lie, the more they believe? And me just being so wire brain this last year and a half, I thought they were gonna do a little in joke reference to The Wire, but he's like, oh no, that was a Joseph Goebbels quote.
Oh, who's that?
He's the minister of Nazi propaganda for Hitler during their reign. So Bunk is a big World War II history buff or something. I don't know.
That's all. Do you think he listens to that one composer? Wagner?
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 Oh shit.
No. But anyways, like that desk stuff is funny. It kind of reminds me of that funny thing that's been going around in the on the Twitter and the social media, like the diss track, like, oh, my mill grinds like pepper and spice or whatever. And it's like, yours, your mill grinds like rats and mice. And it was like something you liked recently. And I mean, I know you have a very diverse, like, anyways, it's like, you know, oh, 1775 diss track, like disses were hard as hell, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, it's like desk dissing, you know? That's like that's like a couple centuries removed from mill dissing, you know?
Right. That's funny.
But yeah, more on Frank Somerville, because so Bay Area legend Frank Somerville from KTVU too, right? I got the like
in
letters
Oakland.
Right? Yeah, like East Bay, Oakland, Bay Area.
Yeah.
It's Oakland though.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, I, you know, that's like Dennis Richmond. Like, my grandma ran into him once at the Safeway down on Jackson.
Nice.
But anyways, seemed like chill dude, she said. But anyways, Frank Somerville, yeah, we just found this very, like ironic. Like, this is crazy because Frank Somerville.
Part two.
Yeah, like, part two. Bay Area Frank Somerville, he recently stated like he'll never work another day, or he won't no longer be an anchor for the news channel there because of a spat he's had, or a dispute. He's like an ongoing dispute with his editors because he wanted to include a tag about the Gabby Petito case, and you know how like there's inequity in reporting on women of color who go missing or are murdered.
Right.
And it's like, wow, a newsroom beef with like Frank Somerville currently capturing like a lot of this conversation, you know, that kind of directly relates back to The Wire, especially comments about this episode and this ain't Aruba bitch. And then we have Frank Somerville, the religion editor. So, I mean, we were both, you know, thinking about this. I just added it, and I'm not taking credit or anything, but I want to hear your thoughts too, and like a little deeper read into it.
I don't know if I have like that much of a deeper read than what you already stated, but yeah, Frank Somerville, safe to say, I think that he has like kind of a bit of perspective on this whole issue, being an adoptive father of like a black daughter himself, and saying like, yeah, it's kind of messed up that there's a disproportionate coverage of white women missing or being murdered when, you know, there's plenty of people of color and indigenous women going missing and getting murdered every day. And then like the news room suspending him for like comments like that, I think it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, I think his editors are just mad. He used to always post like Clyde Carson lyrics on his Facebook or Instagram because his daughter liked the song, and he's like, I don't know what any of this really means. But and then it's like, dude, you can't talk about how like, you know, black guys who drive really fast are like, you know, feeling oppressed, and that they're trying to like ship them off to Santa Rita and stuff like that.
Who's Clyde Carson?
You know, the team, like, slow down.
I don't know.
Sorry. You know, dude, you know, it's getting hot in here. Show up to the cops, you know, like Clyde Carson, the team, Kaz Kaiza.
I'll have to
slow down.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Maybe it's like
Willie knows like every MF Doom lyric, but then when it comes to like, wait, the team? What are you talking about? I don't know like the golden era of hip hop. Just this like off-brand like Bay Area stuff. Apparently,
I'll cue it up on my Spotify on the way home.
God, dude. Sorry. All right, get ready. Are you soon to gentrify West Adams a little bit more? no, but yeah, like, I mean, shame on Frank Somerville. What, like, he went and adopted a black girl. Like, what did he expect, you know?
Jesus Christ.
Like, it's only gonna lead to trouble. Nah, that's bullshit. But they're all like, dude, you can't have this editorial spin to like our news. He's like, no, I'm not even trying to do that. Like, I'm just trying to post, like, he wanted to just posit some facts about like domestic violence and stuff. Like, it wasn't even, oh, this is my story. I don't really understand the context of like, I mean, you're a smart guy. Like, how'd he, so he's going to just use domestic violence statistics and like that kind of stuff, and like crimes against women of color, or like white women too, to like prove something. I didn't understand that really, but he was trying to make it news,
yeah,
like fact based.
I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't really get into like the specifics of exactly what he talked about, but as far as I can see from my perspective, like, yeah, it's totally an issue that the, you know, underprivileged communities don't get nearly as much news coverage as, cute Instagram girls who go missing and ended up being strangled to death.
But I think it all starts at home. Like, imagine if we normalized, like, the way the inner city cares about, like, car chases through L.A. or the Bay. Like, everyone's watching that. So, like, let's just bring more coverage to, like, crimes against women in, like, those communities. Or maybe that's the media's fault. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
Like, they'll be the first ones to show the helicopter chasing after these guys or whoever. Like, oh, you know, and everyone's outside and it's like a whole thing. But like, you know, they're just tricking us. Like, they're pulling the wool over our eye. Like, they're not focusing on the real stories, man. Just like this season's about, you know?
Exactly.
But honestly, man... Sorry, you know, I'm like going on one here.
No.
I really wouldn't have looked into the like current Bay Area, Oakland, East Bay, Frank Somerville, had it not been for this episode and that little detail, because I was just like, oh, old woke Frank Somerville always posting like stories about him and his daughter and like rap lyrics and look at me and everyone loves him so much for it and this and that. But he's like, just this news guy. I mean, he seemed all right, but whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know, like, I just saw, like, oh, he got suspended. And I'm like, oh, what the hell? Because he also had this bizarre, like, slurring incident where he, like, was, like, losing it on a newscast. Like, and then he took this time off to, like, focus on his health. And everyone's like, what the hell? Like, was he on drugs? Like, was he drunk or something? But I think it was just exhausted or had health issues.
Damn.
And then he comes back and this happens.
Yeah,
free Frank, slumlords.
Yeah, not like that other fake Somerville.
Yeah. Oh, went after the religion editor. No.
It's a total joke. No shots fired.
Isn't it like is he still alive?
I don't.
PL Father Frank, you just dissed Father Frank.
Jesus,
we got fake Somerville, fake Reed. The bishop and the father, both Franks.
Jesus Christ. This is getting... Yeah. This is... we still have some storyline to cover.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Either way, we're cursed now.
Yeah, I love that. I love this little tangent we went off on, though. That's great.
Oh, man, we got to... Oh, Bobby Brown, Frank Somerville, Frank Reed. Where does it all tie together? this is fun.
Yeah.
All right. We got more. Yeah, more stories. I know, like, we kind of talked a little bit about, you know, what Scott's up to, right? That's Templeton?
Yeah.
He's doing his little stories. Did we talk about kind of prior to that how he was just kind of, like, given the big story about the classroom by Whiting and all that? And I mean, we've kind of like in a roundabout way, because I like jumped ahead and talked about like Gus and starts at home. Like, you know, they're trying to talk about what like the real issues are, you know, at the heart of all the just kind of crazy, yeah, like just the dysfunction of the city. And, you know, it's like impossible to really nail down due to it being so nuanced. At least Gus wants more context, like in these stories, whereas Whiting doesn't want, all the details, you know, included, even though Spry is all about the details, as is Gus. And, you know, Whiting's wife is working for a nonprofit. She knows. They know what's going on.
Yeah.
He knows, man. You don't have to tell me.
I mean, but I like a couple things. Like, I feel like Spry is all about, like, I feel like he's pleasing to everybody in the office, because he's like, you know, I'm going to look at all the details as like, you know, syntax or the grammatical errors or whatnot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, of course, Gus has an ear and an eye for that too, but he's intellectual, so he wants to examine the context of everything. But is this like, again, a way of like David Simon and Bill Zorzi trying to throw some meta commentary in there? Like, Whiting is like, oh, you know, the majority of people don't care about the details. They're going to watch CSI or Law and Order. They're not going to watch The Wire, where like it examines all angles of law enforcement. They just want things to be, you know, all the murder cases to be wrapped up in one episode.
Like, there you go.
Is he, he's like the American, I forget like the order of the Freudian terms, like he's the id of the American television watching public, or is that the ego or the super ego? I don't know. It's Freudian.
Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, it's just, it's some great, like you said, meta commentary, or like he's the king of meta, he says, which right. is a little like, yeah, can't, like, how does that work?
I don't know, man.
Season five. No. yeah, so Scott's just getting this and that, like everything's handed to him, like they're all like just on his like dick.
Yeah, they're David Constable, Klebanow and Whiting are...
Wait, did you just try to say Klebanow and said Constable?
No, that's the name. That's the actor's name. Okay. Constable.
Constable Klebanow.
Yeah, great actor. But the two head honchos are kind of dick riding Scott Templeton and saying like, oh yeah, your story about EJ was great. Like, I wouldn't change a word. We're putting it front page. No worries about, you know, Gus and his penchant for uncovering the truth about everything. Like, this is great flowery prose, great stuff you're doing there, so don't change anything about it. Meanwhile, Gus is like waking up in a cold sweat, like calling Spry and being like, oh, did I get the statistics right? Like, what's going on? Like, did I do it? Like, is everything accurate? Like, I can't sleep at night.
Row. I was like, oh, that's it, man. That's the roll on, roll off that they use at the docks, the stevedores, mm-hmm. and all that.
Oh.
When the cargo and this and that. And
yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, legit reporter. And that's like a mark of, like, Simon's like, my roommate in freshman year. I don't know if you remember from that USC talk I was talking all about. Talking about last episode. That's all I got, man. I've just been lazy listening to that, driving around instead of actually reading books and, like, touching up on all this subject matter. Fake trout. But he was saying how his freshman room, or like when he was writing on the paper like at Maryland, you know, in college, he just remembers one night or like early in the morning or something, like when the when it went to print, you know, he heard a scream from the shower, like still to this day, like one of the craziest like screams, like a terror, like whatever. And his reporter friend or whatever, like made an error on like a housing price increase and realized it when he saw like it in print.
Yeah.
And it's like, I got to call the president of the university and like apologize for like messing up this and that. And he's like, you know, at least like he felt something. So that means he's legit. Like, even if he screwed up. So.
Right.
But obviously he didn't have a spry in his life. So.
Was that a USC talk or UC Berkeley? I'm just asking. Cause I remember watching lectures from two of them and I think I'm like mixing up the two in my head. No,
I think the Berkeley one was like one of those like despair, like.
That was the Audacity of Despair speech.
USC one was like the journalism school or like...
And he's talking specifically about season five.
Mostly, and he's just like joke, like, oh, you know, good, like none of you are journalism majors. Like, oh, a lot of law students, ugh. oh, communications, okay.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. We'll post it someday.
I think we...
We did probably.
At
we posted
some point,
like,
yeah.
so much.
Yeah,
like, but
back
not
in
enough.
Our,
like, not
back in our
much.
Heyday.
We got some stuff, man. We got some Frank Somerville content, for sure. I want to post something once we finish up
Yeah.
Don't worry. Episode one's coming soon. Sorry. It's like, we're going to do 2 a days and we're going to do, oh, it's like the busiest time of year for me in other aspects. I'm exhausted every day, but yeah. No, like,
and the Warriors are doing really good now.
Oh, the Warriors. Big step in 4 or 5 on me. Look like I'm bench pressing. Okay. Right. No, I'm not a thug. He's not. Okay. Shout out Stunna Man. Yeah, but what a dirtbag Scott. I mean, no wonder he gets like
hassled in the street.
You're a bad man. I just want to be clear to everyone. Like the context of that was like, you're a bad man. Like you're like a piece of crap. Not like, oh, watch out, man. Like Willie, he's a bad man. Like he's whacking on the dance floor. You a bad man.
Yeah.
Not a good bad man.
Yeah. He has a punchable face, but he used it to great effect to highlight some serious sex abuse scandals in Boston.
Yeah.
Check out Spotlight. Great movie. But there's just one more thing on my end that I wanted to talk about that is pretty interesting that they brought up in the commentary.
Yes.
Where, Rebecca Corbett, who was the real life regional affairs desk editor at the Baltimore Sun, when David Simon and Bill Zorzi were working there, in this episode, and I guess in the last episode, she made an appearance. She's played by Kara Quick, and she does this whole thing where she's like asking Gus, like, "Oh, didn't you feel like uncomfortable or like?" Didn't you felt bad or no, like you didn't have anything to say about like Scott Templeton not having any photos of this guy EJ. And then she says like, huh? And like Gus is like, what the fuck do you mean? Huh? Don't say that. And apparently that was like a real thing that the real life Rebecca Corbett did that used to drive Bill Zorzi crazy. So
there you go.
I just thought that was a neat little thing.
That's great. Thanks for sharing.
No problem.
No, I wanted to say also like this kind of, you know, in comparison to your like details and all that good concrete stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, like that's my jam right there. Like go look up for some clippings of like a random shooting with like two initials and like stray bullet. And then I'm like, I still got excited about like some violence against like a little like black teenager.
I don't think you got excited about the violence.
No, you're but just like, oh, that sounds cool. And I'm like, that's a way better comparison than like you saying like, oh, you're channeling your inner prez, like Geo, da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, I'm not the police. People are always asking me like, I'll be talking to someone, you know, and they don't really know me that well, just like a casual work relationship or something. They're like, how do you know this much about like Sacramento, like rap beef, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. They're like, are you the police? Are you wearing a wire right now? Or like, I'll tell someone like chatting with a friend or whatever I haven't seen. And like, we share similar like interests and like urban stuff or whatever. And he's like, bro, like you sound like a cop. Like, you know, way too much about like some random, like geographical this or that. And I'm like, at least I can like identify with looking for random clippings of like news stories.
Nice.
Baltimore Sun archives. Better than the actual. So I wanted to share also with you, like, I got to post this. It's like, why would Scott think that Baltimore is a shitty news town and like be talking trash about it to Alma, you know? And then this was like literally a headline 3 days ago. Front page. Purple streetlights in area are not tribute to Ravens. This is like Monday's thing after like Sunday football. BGE officials say manufacturing defect is behind the glow. Like brilliant investigative reporting there. Those purple lights are not football related.
Oh, that's funny.
And then like 3 pages later, it's like, or 6 pages later, it's like, 3 shootings this weekend, like left like a teenage kid dead and like some woman got shot in the face. I was like, oh, okay. But like, what are those purple lights about on some random road, like in the county?
Yeah. Scott Templeton could never.
Yeah. He'd lie about that somehow.
Yeah.
A whole conspiracy. But yeah, what a lame like story, man. I just can't get over like how greasy it was watching him. Like no one gave a shit. It was pretty funny, like baseball commentary and how like, oh, related to that, you know, Simon never, people are like, why don't you talk about football stuff? He's like, you're a bunch of slum lords, NFL, baseball though. And I'm like, ugh. You know, look at like the guy just talking about how steroids ruined baseball. I'm like, slumlords, you know, like
Houston Astros cheating. Yeah. I don't know too much about it.
That's me banging on my trash can. Okay, a slider's coming. They're slumlords and they lost to like a racist team though.
Oh, the Atlanta Braves. Damn, that's crazy. I totally didn't even register that the World Series already happened. Like I saw something. I saw something about it. I was like, "Oh, huh, wow."
I can't stand the. I like. To me, they're just kind of like the Dodgers of like the South, you know, Braves. Ugh. It's like shut up, like God. Why'd I have to watch them so much? Like only because like, and then like one of my friends growing up had a stupid glove of like one of their pictures. Thought he was all cool. I threw the ball extra hard at him when he wore it. Tom Glavine. Pretty good pitcher.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know too much about it, but there was one other thing that you had in the outline. I don't know if you want to discuss it. Terra Firma Newsroom?
Oh, is that like a... Like, am I tripping? Or because Gus said, you know, I want like... He's like talking to the lady who, huh, you know?
Yeah.
Did he say like I want a Terra Firma news? I don't even know what it means, but what was that the same thing Jimmy was talking about? Like he dropped like a Latinish word when he started talking about this term with Ronnie, and that just code for lawyers jerking each other off. It's not the same thing, right?
Oh, I don't know. Latin for jerking, I don't know.
I was pretty tired while I was doing that, and the Warriors were like playing, so. I'm going to try to rededicate myself, but it's like, it's hard, you know, but we're so close.
Yeah.
It's fun though. Like talking about Frank Somerville.
Terra firma, dry land, the ground as distinct from the sea or air.
Anyways, thanks for tuning in. It's been a pleasure discussing, all these unconfirmed reports.
There you go. As we mentioned before, anchor.fm/thegodswillnotsaveyou/support if you want to throw a few bucks our way.
Yeah, please do. Don't hesitate. We try to keep this great content coming. Huh? No, there's a lot of content out there, but thanks for choosing ours.
Right.
Social media. We post, Willie, thank you always for keeping us up to date, keeping things rolling. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Right.
The gods will not save you. You'll find us, you know, people are talking about it.
Right on. Also, if you want to reach out to us via email, we're always receptive to all your questions, comments, and concerns at thegodswillnotsaveyou@gmail.com.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, everybody.